Up next, in sort of a similar vein, about whom do you believe in expertise and pertaining to global warming and the debate over the causes of it. And if you look back over the last decade, there's been a pretty major shift in the public's perception of global warming. 10 years ago, we were probably still debating whether global warming was even happening. And now it seems that most people, even those in the Oval Office, agree that global warming is actually occurring. Most skeptics have moved to debating the causes, blaming it on everything from volcanoes to natural climate cycles, everything that is but humans. But if you listen to the majority of climate scientists, there's no doubt global warming is caused by humans, so why do the skeptics persist? And when you find yourself seated next to one at that Thanksgiving table this year, how can you convince him or her, short of pulling out some charts and graphs, that we humans are one of the major causes? A new exhibition at the American Museum of Natural History might help you gather some of the facts you'll need. The exhibition is called Climate Change, The Threat to Life, and a New Energy Future, and it opens tomorrow in New York City. And joining me now to talk more about it is Michael Oppenheimer, who is co-curator of the exhibition. Dr. Oppenheimer is the Albert G. Milbank Professor of Geosciences and International Affairs at the Woodrow Wilson School of Princeton University. He's here in our New York studios. Welcome.
Thank you, Ira.
Good to see you again. Okay, so you're sitting next to your Uncle Sal at Thanksgiving. Pick a name. Aunt Mary, Uncle Sal. And somehow the subject of climate change comes up. He says global warming is a bunch of hoo-ha, and everybody knows it's caused from volcanoes spewing out CO2 or it was sunspots. What do you say to that person?
Well, let's say that Sal really wants to know the details. You can treat him the way you would a government official who's interested in making some decision about this problem. And you would note that the governments themselves, often being confused about scientific details, appoint groups of scientists which are broadly representative of the relevant expert community, like in this case, for instance, climatologists. And they ask them, so what's the deal? And we have, for instance, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, which has a very high reputation for producing good assessments of the problem. We have at the international level the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So I would tell old Sal to go look at the reports. They have neat summaries that are designed to be aimed at the level of intelligence of a typical policymaker. And those summaries are pretty clear in enunciating what we know, what we don't know, what's likely, what's less likely, what probably won't happen. If, on the other hand, Sal really doesn't want that level of detail but just wants to know a few things like why didn't changes in the sun cause the warming we've seen? Why is it due to human activity? You can go to the web and go to various scientifically reputable organizations that have produced various myth fact sheets on global warming. There, it's a little more difficult. You have to trust an organization. A good one is the Union of Concerned Scientists, for instance.
And what about trying to argue the points yourself and coming up with, well, Sal will say, you know, it was a pretty wet and cold winter that we had this year. How does that fit in with global warming?
Well, you know, I can argue the facts myself, but the average person sitting next to Uncle Sal probably would have difficulty. And for them, I would recommend either they want to get deeply into it and, you know, do what the government officials would do and look at the assessments, or they could get these sort of lighter myth fact sheets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the level of depth you can get into these things is up to you. If you have the time for it, I would advise every intelligent citizen to read and decide for themselves. But ultimately, our governments need to be guided by the weight of expert opinion. It doesn't mean that the weight of expert opinion is always right, but if you've got, you know, 2,500 scientists on the one hand and five on the other, you have to make decisions based on the 2,500, I would say.
Would it be fair to say in answer to Sal that you can't look at individual little events that occur on a year-by-year event?
Certainly, the answer to that question is climate and weather are not the same thing. Weather is what happens today or tomorrow. Climate is the long-term average. And when we talk about climate change, we're talking about changes in the long-term average. It can do almost anything on any given day.
And so if you look, you say, well, you may be right about this winter. It might be a little wetter and colder. But if we look at the long-term, over the last 20, 30, 100 years, you definitely would see a trend in temperature.
Without doubt, trend in temperature, trend in sea level, trends in precipitation, trends and shrinkage of ice. There's one after the other. And those are the sorts of things that are enumerated very clearly in the summaries of these reports.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can go to the phones and get some callers. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Eric in Wilmington. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Ira. Thanks so much for taking my call, and I really enjoy your show. I'd like your guest to comment on my thought, and I'll try and keep it brief. I have a big problem with climate change, not in that I don't feel, based on all that I've read, that there is something going on, but my feeling is about the discussion with climate change is that it's taking on aspects of religion, in that those who espouse climate change and the effects, they, in many ways, in my opinion, seem to be disregarding facts, disregarding the skeptics, and no longer really interested in pursuing the details of it. I'm a reader of Bjorn Lomborg.
Well, first of all, since you're from Cleveland, let me...
Wilmington, Delaware.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say this exhibit is going to travel to Cleveland and a bunch of other cities, but not Wilmington, as it turns out. First of all, we have to separate the science from people's opinion about what to do about the problem and people's evaluation of what the risk means to them. There isn't much argument that the problem is real, it's happening, and that if it isn't dealt with, that Earth will have a much different climate over the next few decades. There also isn't much argument in the scientific community that unless emissions are reduced, that's a very likely outcome. However, where you proceed from there is a matter of culture, belief, and political opinion. And anybody is entitled to any opinion, frankly, about what the political system ought to do about the problem or whether it ought to do anything at all. I have my opinions. I think it's a rather urgent problem that requires action. But I think that where that break occurs between scientific fact and reasonable opinion about political action is where people often get confused. And if we can just keep those two things separate, I think we'd be a lot better off.
Eric, are you saying that you're still a skeptic about it and you don't understand how people have still have dismissed the opposite opinion?
Well, I'm saying I think your guest maybe did express one of my problems. I think all sensible, maybe I shouldn't use that word, all rational minds and everybody who investigates this agrees that there is some sort of warming going on the planet. But what we do about it and how much faith we put in models, to me, becomes a point of genuine discussion, and I'm very concerned that we're running off from Europe to the United States, we're running off to spend literally trillions of dollars that might be spent much more effectively even on the results of global warming than trying to stop what may be man-made, but only man-made to a degree. I'm just saying I find it an intensely complex subject that to some degree science has overly simplified in the public's eyes.
Well, let's step back for a minute. What the consensus in the scientific community is today, and I'll quote from the report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is that most of the warming of the past 50 years is very likely due to the buildup of greenhouse gases, that is due to anthropogenic activity, what humans have done it. Beyond that, there are additional details about what that buildup, if it continues, would do to the climate. You don't need to rely on computer models to make those assessments. We can look back at past climates. For instance, the last time that Earth was as warm as it's expected to be in the middle of this century, if we do nothing about emissions, the ice sheets were significantly smaller and sea level was 15 or 20 feet higher. If that were to happen over the coming centuries, it could prove disastrous. Now, people can make up their own minds about what to do about that. Do they care about a sea level rise that may only affect future generations or largely affect future generations? Or do they only care about what's going on over the next 20 years? I can't tell them what to decide, but I certainly have my own opinion.
This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow here talking about climate change with Michael Oppenheimer. Curator, Michael, tell us about the exhibit that's opening up here in New York.
The exhibit is an attempt to clarify these issues by presenting a problem which everybody agrees is rather abstract, if not arcane, in a more tangible fashion. And the exhibit used closely to the reports of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change while trying to breathe some life into what can seem like dry scientific language by vividly demonstrating, using the usual museum techniques of interactive exhibits and dioramas, both the nature of the problem and the potential effect of various solutions, like using energy more efficiently, implementing renewable energy, implementing nuclear energy. So there's a variety of options discussed for what to do about the problem if one chooses to act.
What I'm always curious about, I'm talking to a curator. What does a curator of a museum do?
God, I didn't realize what a curator does until I got involved with this a year and a half ago. I'm just a professor. Basically, what you do is you tell the exhibit experts, who are really artists to a certain extent, what material they ought to be guided by in creating the exhibit. And then you act as scientific referees to try to make sure that no one could draw the wrong conclusions when the dry words are turned into visual or interactive exhibits.
So are you constantly seeing projects as they progress?
We constantly see it. We, you know, even went into the manufacturing part of it a couple of times. We meet with the exhibition designers continually. We go over the script that's posted on the walls again and again and again. Everything is rewritten a million times. And we just make sure it used very closely to reality.
Mm-hmm. And what do you see when you walk into the Museum of Natural History in this exhibit?
Yeah, the first thing you see is a line on the wall in neon, which indicates the tremendous growth in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere over the last 400 years. And it's laid against a background which illustrates the growth of industrialization across the face of the planet, which has caused that increase in the greenhouse gases. Then you move to the simulation of a one-ton chunk of coal. It's an immense object, and it represents roughly the amount of carbon, say, that a small car would emit as carbon dioxide during the year. Those two monumental things grab a hold of you. And then at the end of the exhibit, you come to some other monumental objects which are part of the solution, a bit blade from a huge wind turbine, a simulated reactor, a big display of solar photovoltaic panels. And so the balance shifts from this heavy stuff causing the problem to heavy stuff having the solution.
Mm. We're going to take a break, come back, and take your calls, talking about global warming, how to talk about global warming with Michael Oppenheimer. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatto. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. We're talking with Michael Oppenheimer, who is co-curator of the new exhibition at the American Museum of Natural History, talking about climate change. It's the name of the exhibit. It's called Climate Change, the Threat to Life and a New Energy Future. And Dr. Oppenheimer is shared the Nobel Prize in 2007, awarded to the IPCC and to Al Gore. Must still feel good about that.
Yes, there were hundreds of us who shared that Nobel Prize. I want to make that clear. It was Al Gore plus a cast of hundreds on the IPCC.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the exhibit. You mentioned some of the things we'd be seeing. Anything else?
Yeah, I want to make one of the unusual things about the end of the exhibit where we talk about solutions is not only do we don't just show these technologies, we talk about the problems and the advantages of each. For instance, nuclear power, which is disfavored by a lot of people, I myself am rather skeptical of it, is very expensive. It carries with it the threat of exposure to terrorists and proliferation of bomb-grade materials. Solar energy is terrific. It has a light footprint, but it happens to be expensive as of today. Carbon capture and storage, sucking the carbon dioxide out of a power plant stream, waste stream, and burying it underground, the stuff may leak to the surface. So no solution is perfect. We do have a set of solutions early on we present that are based on energy efficiency and things that people themselves can do, like buying cars that get high fuel economy. So there's a mixture of solutions investigated.
Tom in Huntsville, is it Huntersville, North Carolina?
It's Huntersville, Ira.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Hi, welcome.
Great show. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, you know, there's a lot of us that are kind of skeptical, and I think some of it has to do with how the issue has become politicized in the last few years. And, two, I remember being in college probably 25 years ago, and my professors were absolutely convinced that we were heading into the next ice age if we didn't take immediate and drastic action. And now 25 years later, we're heading into global warming if we don't take immediate and drastic action. And a lot of us that have probably fallen to the center are very skeptical of these issues because we get these different stories year to year. always seen by the same people and kind of requiring or asking for the same results.
Well, on the point that you raise, it's true that in the early 1970s, about 35 years ago, a small group of scientists did pose the hypothesis that Earth at that time may be cooling because, in fact, global temperature had stopped rising, which it had been doing for some decades. We now understand why that happens. Science evolves. After all, we do learn more. And by the late 1970s, it was perfectly clear that global warming rather than cooling was underway. And that's been the case for the last 30 years, and there's now a firm consensus on it. And you should understand, this is not a partisan issue. Both presidential candidates have firmly stated that they believe the problem is serious and it needs to be solved. There's no reason for us to degenerate into political arguments about it.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
Was that some of the thinking that went in when you went into planning for the exhibit? We may be seen as being political here.
We have been very careful not to be political, and it's not that hard to stay non-political because there's a big body of facts. We didn't want to get people fighting with each other about exactly what solution should be accepted. We just wanted them to see the full range of possible alternatives. And the fact, again, that it is a nonpartisan issue to some extent and that both presidential candidates see it as something that needs to be dealt with tells me that we're on firm ground.
So after New York, where is the exhibit?
It's going to travel to a number of cities in the United States, including Cleveland, as I mentioned before. And then it's going to travel abroad, South Korea.
Really?
The United Arab Emirates and a variety of other places. So it's going to be seen broadly after it leaves New York in the summer.
And you expect a big turnout?
We'll see. You know, it doesn't make sense to predict turnout. It's like Election Day. I'll believe it when I see it.
All right. Thank you for taking time to be with us today, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Oppenheimer, co-curator of Climate Change, the Threat to Life, and a New Energy Future that opens tomorrow at the American Museum of Natural History here in New York. He's also the professor of geosciences and international affairs at the Woodrow Wilson School at Princeton University.